to One Inch Press Scary Podcast. I'm Christy Sayer, and my guest today is none other than the very famous Joe Garcia of Garcia MMA. Thank you for doing this with me.
Of course.
This is so cool.
Of course, I couldn't wait.
I'm so excited. Joe and I met how long ago? How long ago was it? I should know this.
It's had to have been like 2 years.
Yeah, at least 2 years ago. I was in the midst of really in the heavy throes of dealing with PTSD, and it had been recommended to me by a friend and then my psychiatrist that I check out martial arts, and specifically something like a grappling art, which was so counterintuitive because of who I am. I would see this on TV, I would see this on videos and be completely repulsed by it. Like, why on earth would anybody want to get close to somebody so sweaty and then like hurt each other? Like, this is so I'm a yoga person and I'm a runner so that I don't have to interact with others. Like, I'm not even a team player at all. So then like to get as close as you can possibly get with a sweaty person you don't even know who has the intention of hurting you. Well, not really, but you know. And it was just so counterintuitive, but my psychiatrist was this very zen, this Indian, almost shaman guy who's also had prescribed yoga twice a day. So I'm like, whatever this guy says, and he was really good. Whatever he prescribed for me was working. He was really tuned in. So I'm like, oh. And then, you know, a friend of mine really encouraged me and really kind of like got me excited about it. And so I walked in here, and
you were training hard that day.
You were training hard that day. And so, like, if you will, picture this. This like 40-year-old woman, mom of five, just cruising into not knowing at all what she was going to see. Like, I hadn't chatted to you beforehand. I tried to leave messages, but they weren't returned. I'm like, I'm just showing up. Like, I'm just gonna show up. And I come in here and it's straight up a fight club. Like, there's nothing, this isn't a like nice sterile little dojo. Joe, describe our surroundings. We are in.
It's a fight gym. There's mats everywhere. We purposely put graffiti on the walls. I mean, when we bought this place, we painted all the walls white and put murals everywhere. So like the walls literally look like the sides of train cars in the ghetto.
Yeah.
There's a giant mural of a guy getting his teeth knocked out. It's the first thing you see when you walk in.
Yeah, it's intense.
It's like a 10-foot tall picture of a guy literally getting his teeth knocked out.
Yeah. It's a graffiti, fight club. It's a fight club, and it was full of fighters. And Joe, you'll see a picture, you'll see, you know, before you even listen to this, is an intimidating looking person, or he'll be the first to say, like, no, he doesn't greet people at the door because he says that he feels that he looks scary. Now, I don't actually see that because you have a really sweet smile and you have a really kind of gentle manner about you, but he has facial tattoos, a tattoo on his neck. He's a like buff dude.
Shaved
He's a
head.
Fighter. He's got a shaved head. He's like, so here I am coming into this straight up fight club with guys half my age and twice my height. I was very much the whitest, oldest and femalest by like 20 years and 16 shades and like at least 30 pounds. Like, I was just
probably felt a little out of place walking in.
I mean, and this is the weird part. I didn't.
No.
Like, I instantly felt embraced. It was the weirdest thing. And like, people are like, oh my God, that's so brave of you. How did you, you know, weren't you intimidated? And I'm like, I actually really wasn't, because I have a kind of the sense that when we walked into our house that we have now, I just got a sense of a place. I really kind of tune into the vibe of a place. And this was a welcoming family. Like, nobody had an ego here. I mean, maybe they did, but they weren't allowed to kind of flex it, right?
That was the vision of this place when we opened this place, was to have that kind of embracing culture, because it's not for everybody.
Right.
But we get the right people in here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody's out here to hurt anybody. Nobody's here to show their ass. It's crazy how the culture we've created has kind of attracted more of those same kind of people that we want anyway. Like we have always been able to get the right people in and the right people out. And the wrong kind of people come in, but they don't last very long.
They leave. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I love this, what you just said, because it's like you decided what the culture of the place was going to be. You modeled the culture, and then it just went with the flow. Like, you didn't have to... And I can honestly say I came religiously, like, 3 times a week for a long time. And there was a bunch of different types of people. You know, there was like the diehards that were there every single time. But there was only one single time that I ever encountered someone who I was like, nope, I do not like you. And that guy, I think, just came once and never came back.
He never came back.
Yeah.
And nobody said anything to him. Nobody beat him up. But it's almost like the culture reflects those kind of people.
Yes. And so it's kind of like there's a lot to be said for what you think about or what you model expands. And you don't have to make a big fuss about anything, because you never have. Like, I never hear you yelling the rules or, like, you know, flexing any kind of authority or anything. People just sort of self-govern.
Yeah.
And I look at all these BJJ, like, on the Instagram feed, I follow a bunch of them, and there's so many memes about, like, with guys looking like sharks, like, oh, you know, when the white belt comes in. And I'm like, what is this? That's messed up.
It happens.
Yes, I know it happens. It apparently does.
I was that white belt for a while. So when I started training, like, the first jiu-jitsu guy ever in Toledo was Chris Blanke. Like, there's a lot of jiu-jitsu in Ohio now, but back when I started training when I was 17, it was Chris Blanke.
Yeah.
And he had a room full of, like, killers. And he had Sal Rivera living with him.
Wow.
So Sal Rivera, like, if you Google Sal Rivera, like, he's one of the best of all time. He was, like, number one in the world at the time, and he was living in Toledo.
Amazing.
Right? It was amazing. So, like, if you didn't know something, if you didn't know at least a little bit, or at least wrestle, like, those dudes would just maul you every single day. Like, I remember I would leave, like, with burns on my chest from my gi strangling me, like, over and over again.
Why, though? So were they, and what were these guys like off the mat? Were they chill, or were they, like, aggressive?
I didn't really associate with them off the mat.
Yeah. That says a lot.
I was kind of a hermit.
So describe what you do. I mean, you have been a fighter. Like, you identify yourself that if I were to say, who are you? You're like, I'm a fighter.
I'm a fighter.
Because there's been several times when I have, in my maternal way, when you show up, like, bruised or you, dislocated or broken or bloody or well, and I'm like, this isn't good. Like, you have a lot of life left to live.
Right.
You have children. This is like, you've got to take care. And you're like, Kirsty, what do you say to me when I say that?
That's what I do. I'm a fighter. I say fish fly.
Fish swim. You see, you need to stop
fighting. See, I need to stop fighting. Fish swim, birds fly, I fight.
Yeah.
And I think everybody for what they love and what their passion is, they give a little piece of themselves. For me, it's a little more obvious because it's my body. You can physically see what I'm giving by my black eyes, my nose, my elbows, and my hands. But I think even people that sit at desks or whatever it is your passion is in life, if you think about it, you've given a piece of yourself for it.
Yeah.
For me, I've just given my body.
So you trade in a piece of yourself. I suppose that's pretty deep.
Mine's just a little more visible than other people's.
Well, okay. So let's talk about that, because I think you are underselling kind of the intensity of your passion. Yeah. Because the people who are in accountants, I don't think have this. Well, they don't have the same kind of passion in terms of giving a part of themselves. They leave that at work and they go home. And you live, you're a fighter. Like, this is how you identify yourself. So what I'm really interested in here is the mentality. Because as I talk, you know I'm kind of a voice for recovering from PTSD and the hope that comes, you know, if you do the work. I truly, genuinely believe that anybody can heal from whatever their past has thrown at them, or they've thrown at themselves through different decisions. I honestly do believe that, you know, our thoughts make who we are, and eventually with help and support, we can all be happy and at peace.
Absolutely.
And that takes, though, a ton of getting back up. I mean, the only way to do that is to get back up. And sometimes we stay down longer, and
some people don't get up,
but you do get up.
Yeah, you have to.
And I think this mentality is fascinating, because I think you get up in your personal life over and over again. You've had a bit of a rough go of a life, I would say. And but you also get up in terms of what you do for a living, like over and over. And so I'm so interested in this kind of mentality. Like, you just had a fight over this weekend.
Yes.
Tell us what happened.
So I fought David White, who's a cool guy, by the way. He came from Baltimore. I always forget if it's Baltimore or Boston. It's one of those eastern states. Guy was massive. I mean, I'll send you a picture of the weigh-in, but I'm 5'8", he's 6'6".
Okay, guy, that's a bit of a disparity.
Guy was just an absolute giant, which I've fought big guys before. You know, I'm not going to, you know, make any kind of excuse because he was big. It was not as big. He was a really smart fighter.
Yeah, and jiu-jitsu is about, like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what.
But the first thing that catches the eye, if you look at the weigh-in pictures, the guy was huge.
Yeah.
But I came out, I landed some decent shots, but he did too. I didn't really win any of the exchanges. He had an answer for everything.
Yeah.
I shot a really, really bad takedown, and he caught me what's called a crucifix. And for people listening or who don't do jiu-jitsu or wondering what that is, a crucifix is kind of like...
horrible as it sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He trapped one of my arms with his legs, and he trapped my other arm with his arm, rendering both of my arms trapped, kind of with my arms in position like a crucifix.
Yeah.
And then used his free hand to elbow me in the middle of my head.
And if you see him now, he's got a bunch of bruises on his forehead. Like, it doesn't look good.
And then in the midst of getting elbowed in the head, I also dislocated my shoulder twice, which led to a referee stoppage, which was a loss by TKO. So
that was a rough fight.
It was a rough fight.
So now, if I've never dislocated my shoulder, and I can only imagine how painful it is because I've had like a slight shoulder injury, and I freaked right out because I'm like, I cannot. I have to be able to do yoga. I have to be able to run. I was like so stressed. I went to the doctor immediately. You're like, oh, he dislocated my shoulder twice. So that means that you had dislocated shoulder, continued to fight.
Yeah.
And then allowed him to do that again, which is kind of a different mentality than what I work with.
Yeah.
So, how?
I can only compare it to like getting a piercing. You know, when you get a piercing, it's just like a quick, like, oh, that sucked. And you're kind of okay afterward. It's kind of similar getting your shoulder popped. Like, well, yeah, it hurts like hell, but there's, you know.
But you don't have in you like, whoa, that hurt and I am done.
No.
So you're like, that hurts. Okay, that's temporary.
Now what?
Now what? And I think this is such a winning attitude for life. Like, if we could just transpose this into our lives, you know, not everybody is a fighter or should be, and I don't actually condone what you are doing to your head, I've got to say, but I'm not, like, it's your life and I respect you. But, okay, so what was I going to say? Yeah, it's like, if everybody could have this thing, like you get a blow and it hurts so much and you acknowledge that and, you know, you pop your shoulder back in or you take a moment or you get it set or you put it in a sling or whatever, and then you're like, now what? Let's get back in the fight.
Yeah.
How though, did is this instinctive for you? Is this like you've just always had this, or do you have to psych yourself up? Have you ever really been down that you're like, I think I'm done with fighting. I'm sick of being hurt all the time. I'm done with this. I keep losing. Have you been on a losing streak where you're like, or has that never happened?
I've been on losing streaks, and I mean, I think every fighter gets to those moments where they're like, you know what, I should just be done with this, but it never lasts any longer than like a day. Like, you wake up in the morning like, what was I thinking?
Okay.
You know, just like people do with their jobs. There's people that walk into their job on Monday like, you know what, like, I'm gonna put my 2 weeks in, but then they don't. You know?
Right. Well, unless they do.
Unless they do. Yeah.
I mean, people do.
I love fighting.
So you love it. You just love it. And so when it hurts, you're like, I don't love that part, but I love the rest of it. So how do you tune into the part that you, like, is there a mental exercise that you do? You just kind of leave that behind? Because I think a lot of us, including myself, and I'm really trying to move out of that kind of way of thinking. And it's so freeing when you kind of find ways to do that. But I think a lot of us really dwell in the pain. And we sit there for a while and think about it and ruminate about it, and that sort of dictates, like, you know, this is our life.
Yeah.
Now my life is pain, you know, and you're like, whoa, that happened, but it's part of a fight, and now what?
And you can't change it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, dwelling on it, and, you know, obviously there's lessons to be learned from losing in fights and from losing in life, but dwelling on it doesn't change anything.
That's so true.
So it's like, yeah, you know, my shoulder got popped out or my nose got broken or this happened or that. Yeah, that sucked. How can I avoid that happening again? But what's the next move? Because that's all that matters is the next move, the next mission, the next fight.
So I love this because you're saying, like, look, we learn from our mistakes. You know, I think people get, especially people who've experienced a lot of trauma or true problems, and literally everybody alive has, say, honestly, don't give me this crap of like, just move on, let it go. You have no idea my pain and stuff. And I've been in that. And honestly, you do, for some things, you just kind of have to process things in their own time. But this is so key. What you said is you cannot change it. You can only learn from it. And so you can go, that was not a loss, that was an experience. That was a learning episode. Yeah. This was, you know, one more thing to, so what did you learn from this fight? Well, you dislocated your shoulder twice. You look bad right now, I'm not gonna lie. You look tough, but bad. And lost, which is not a nice feeling.
It was kind of, a lot of people came up to me after the fight, even at the fight too, because I had a lot of people there like expecting me to be like traumatized, like, oh my God, you lost, because.
And also you dislocated your shoulders.
Yeah.
Like I
yeah.
can't
and,
get
and
over,
my head
I,
was
I
like,
can't get past that part.
Yeah. My head was
this
like,
is days later and you do not look great.
Yeah. My head was like the size of a soda can when it came out of the
I
cage.
I can only
it
imagine.
It was massive. But I think people, like, especially people that have met me in recent years, you know, I've got all these belts here, I've got all these trophies, I've got all these medals. I think people came to see me as, like, this invincible person that never loses.
Yeah.
But I lost before this. I lost in boxing. I lost when I played football. Anything I've ever done, I've lost at least once.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, like, somebody's got to win, somebody's got to lose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you only have a 50-50 shot. And,
of course.
And,
yeah.
You know, it was his night. And I think people were expecting me to be a little more, like, hurt than I was. But I can't do anything about it. I can only come back better. And
right.
I still see myself as, I know I can still compete with the best guys in the world. Well, and that's why this guy came all the way from Maryland to fight me, because that's where we have to get them from.
So that's a really good thing. You like keep focusing on
yeah.
like, well, I'm good because this
yeah.
guy came.
Yeah,
like, look
absolutely.
At this guy, and
yeah.
it was his night. So if we can translate that into our lives, you know, imagine how free we would all be.
Yeah. Some days it's just not your day.
It's not your day, it's the other person's day.
Yeah.
And if you really have, you know, the philosophy of, you know, this universal consciousness, which I really believe in, is that we are all kind of one. We're all connected. And there is no loss, really, in life. It's like, if it's that person's day, that's their day to win. And if it's your day to learn. And, you know, it's there's no loss for somebody else's win. If, you know, we can all, there's enough wins to go around.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I really like that that philosophy. That's really impressive.
He was a cool guy too, and I don't smoke or drink or anything like that. But he sat next to me. We were both getting looked at by the doctor, because win or lose, you have to get looked at by the doctor when you exit the cage. Even if you knock a guy out with one punch and don't get touched, you have to get looked at by the doctor, or they'll suspend you. They're very serious about that.
That's
so me and him are sitting next to each other, and I'm obviously fucked up.
Yeah.
And he's sitting next to me, like, giving me fist bumps or whatever, you know, like, thanks for taking the fight. Nobody else would fight me, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, hey, man, you smoke? And he gestures to me, you know, like a joint. Like, you want to go smoke a joint? I'm like, no, but thank you for the offer. But, you know, that was the kind of guy he was. That,
yeah, just,
you know,
like, cool.
Yeah,
like
you know,
like,
you want to hang out after
this. Yeah, you know, job is done. Let's party.
You know, it's over. Yeah, let's hang out.
I love that. I think, you know, wouldn't the world be so much better if we all just...
Fist fought each other.
Well, yeah, maybe. But if we all just sort of approached competition like that, or, you know, just even in business, you know, if we're competing with another business, it's like at the end of the day, we're all brothers and sisters. We're all
Some of the nicest people I've ever met are people that I fought. I fought a guy who was, you ever seen the movie Machine Gun Preacher?
No.
I fought a guy who was, like, similar to that. Like, he went to Africa, like, 2 or 3 times a year and, like, did charity work. I fought a guy that was a lawyer for domestic violence victims. Like, I've fought, like, some of the coolest dudes ever. I fought some douchebags, too, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
but, like, some of the, like, most kind-hearted and most interesting people I've met and that I'm still friends with are people that I've came to blows with in the cage.
And that's, you know, that's exactly what I found here. You know, during that really difficult time, this became a very, it's almost like it was this very rowdy, stinky, hot church for me to come here And it was chaotic and just like, you know, all the things that I am not about. I'm easily overstimulated. I'm like, this place is hot. It's freaking chaos. Everybody's everywhere. We're all
people
on top
walk
of each
right
other.
Past this place.
There's sweat. Yeah, and I'm like loving it. It was such a soothing place because everybody was kind. Everybody had a good heart. And, you know, there was, people would take time away from their own fight and their own like improvement and rolling and stuff to be with this total newbie and just so patient and invested in helping me to learn and wouldn't hurt me just for the hell of it.
That was an important part of the culture too, because like where I came from, when I started fighting, when I started doing MMA, gyms weren't like this. And really, even now, there aren't a lot of gyms that have the culture that we have. But back then, it was like there was pro fighters, and then there was feeding fish. So if you didn't come in already trained and already knowing something, you were just a body for guys to spar with.
Yes.
So I actually got a lucky break when I was probably 17, 18. There's a guy named Thomas Russell who's a pro. He's a retired pro fighter now, but he would take me aside every day, like, let me show you this. Let me show you that, because he would see me getting beat up every day, and he would see me keep coming back, like, let me help you out so you don't keep getting concussed every day in the gym. That was, like, really, really rare back then.
That's like, special.
It didn't happen at MMA gym. So I wanted to make sure to create a culture like that where everybody helped everybody else. You're only as important as the person next to you.
And that is exactly what it feels like, because I had, you know, and these kids that I roll with over here are college kids. Like, and there's a couple of guys who were my age or a little bit older. What is his name who left, and we miss him so much. Now you've forgotten his name, but you have a concussion.
Steve.
Such a special guy. Yes. He was so kind. But Sam, you know, young Sam, he just really just is so patient, and I never felt condescended to. He's just so real.
He's such an interesting individual, because when he first came to me, first of all, his older brother was like one of my best friends in high school, and all the Kearns looked so much alike. When Sam came in, I thought he was John.
Okay.
I'm like, hey, what's up, John?
Sam has like 10 siblings or something.
Yeah, there's a lot of Kearns. There's a whole gang of them.
Yeah.
And but Sam is one of those guys, like, he looks very unassuming, but he's an absolute killer.
He's so
and
intense.
When he's not in the gym, like, he's literally playing Dungeons and Dragons. Like, that is the example I use for people. That there's not really like a type.
There's
that's a
not
fighter.
A type.
Like, this dude literally will murder people on the mat
and then
like,
go off and play Dungeons
and
Dragons.
And go home and play Dungeons and Dragons.
He's so cool. He's
and
just like
cupcakes.
And bakes cupcakes and does yoga.
And does yoga.
Does a lot of yoga. Let's
and he's
play.
A killer.
Yeah,
he's
a killer. Freaking insane. But also will super gently teach this person who's old enough to be his mom. And you know, he was very real. Like, I remember him saying, "Well, like, you're not using your legs," and I'd be like, "Well, what do you mean?" He's like, "Well, you need to do more with your legs." And I was like, what do you recommend? And he's like, "Act as though you have some." And then that was the most, like, that was the harshest thing he ever said. And I just could not stop laughing because I was like, right. I forgot I had these legs. They're just flopping around like a rag doll. Yeah. But yeah, he's great. And just everybody here was that.
Yeah.
You know, just cool, you know, all business.
We all take care of each other.
Yeah, really a family. And, you know, I felt super embraced by you and Mandy and just everybody here. I felt really so grateful.
Yeah, Mandy's great because she, you know, we call her the warden, and we call her that for a reason.
Yeah.
But, you know, me and her got together in 2009, 2010. So we'd already been together. She'd already been on the fight scene like 7-8 years before we opened this place.
Really?
So when
so
I...
So did you meet through the fight scene?
No.
Okay.
But we actually did meet when I invited her to come watch a fight.
Okay.
And she had never seen one
so
before.
So this was like the genesis.
Yeah. I had tried forever. Like, I had tried so hard to get with her. Like, I tried everything. Let's go to Frickers.
Then the fight got her.
The fight got her.
That reeled her in.
Every chance I got.
So anybody out there who's trying to figure out a way to reel in
invite him to a fight.
A resistant woman.
And so when I first started bringing her like around the fight scene, she was like this girly girl, kind of, you know, painted nails.
Yeah.
And the fight scene over time like hardened her, you know, like in a good way.
Yeah.
And she actually,
she's
I mean,
still
you know,
pretty girly.
She commands the mat better than I do. I mean,
she's incredibly confident.
She can get the attention of the room better than I do.
Yeah, yeah. No, she's like gets things, she sorts things out.
She doesn't fuck around.
No. But she's also gentle and kind. And like, I just remember her, you know, approaching me and saying, okay, well, do you want to sit and watch?
She is the most,
what's the word I'm looking for? Like the most giving person
yeah.
I've ever known in my life.
That's
like,
so,
like
that's
they say,
so
like a candle that burns itself to provide light for others. Like oh. like that's her. She'll give you all of her, but do not fuck with her.
I get that.
She's a stick of dynamite.
She is, and I loved it when Mandy was here and when she was able to like roll and she wasn't busy doing other things, because it was the only person that would give me a decent
yeah.
fight, because the guys were afraid to hurt me, which was very
including me.
Including you, and I'd be like, come on, what's going on here? Yeah. I can tell you're not doing anything. Yeah. But it was so cool because, and I totally understand why the guys were a little hesitant, because of course, you know. But yeah, she would just go for it, and it was so fun and liberating and amazing.
I think a lot of the reason she did that too is because she was in that position before too, like when we would train and like nobody would go hard on
nobody had touched
and so she
her, yeah.
she knows that frustration
yeah yes and
of being the girl in the gym, like come the fuck on, like
I'm here for a reason,
yeah, like I'm here for the same reason you are, don't
exactly.
baby
exactly yeah. Although I would say to you when we were doing boxing, please don't hit my head. And I bumped into Sam running yesterday and I said to him, you know, I don't like being hit in the head because, and I know that for sure because of when you did hit me in the head. And I'm very certain I never want that to happen again, because you know when you see in the cartoons, like the stars and
yeah.
the birds, it's a real thing.
Yeah.
I discovered that when Sam gave a light punch, he called it a light punch. I'm like, nope.
Nope,
I
not for me.
Was surprised not to see my teeth on the ground. So. Yeah, but she was,
I never minded being hit. I mean, I don't like being hit. I hate when people say they like being hit. That's a lie. But
well,
I don't mind being hit.
So what I have to say is that you have allowed me to hit you a lot. And it is so nice. I've got to say, if you are a person locally in Bowling
Green. Stop trying to punch me in the face.
And particularly a woman. And you feel like you've just got some things that you would like to work out. Joe and Co are down for you hitting them, like, anywhere you like. They are, like, they're here for it.
Other than the groin of the throat.
Well, yeah, but you'll often, like, have pads on
yeah.
and whatever, and
yeah.
you can just go for it.
Yeah.
No, like, yeah, we, well...
That's therapeutic.
Nobody listening to this would want to hit you in the groin of the throat. But it's so therapeutic, and I remember, like, I never could imagine before coming here throwing a punch. I could never imagine making physical contact with somebody else's head. Like, I used to think about it and what it would feel like, and it would repulse me. It really worried me.
It was great, wasn't it?
Well, then I remember you, like, encouraging me to, and then I barely touch you, and then you would say, bad intentions, Christy, bad intentions.
Bad
and that was so liberating. It was, like, what I needed, because during the PTSD stage, I went through the rage stage, is what I call, and I think there's somebody, I've forgotten her name, but she survived the Holocaust and is this most amazing giving person. She actually does therapy neo-Nazis now who
really?
Don't even know what happened to her, and she doesn't tell them, and she just treats them with so much love and acceptance. She's amazing. And she says rage is necessary for forgiveness. She was like, there's no forgiveness without rage. So you got to get that out of your system. You've got to feel the full extent, and you were here for it, and you just let me do this in such a constructive way. You were like, hit harder, and it was really like therapeutic. So
we always say better in here than out there.
Yeah, for real. Oh, better to make contact with somebody who's down with it than use your words, which I also did, to harm people, or, you know,
somebody who cut you off in traffic.
Or just turn it inwards. This is what I found, is self, you know, loathing is anger turned inwards, and it's
toxic.
Not good. It's toxic. So I just have to say, like, this has been such a positive experience for me in like a thousand different ways. It was getting out of my comfort zone. It was experiencing a whole culture that I did not even know existed. I never watched fight movies. I still haven't seen. Like, I've seen Million Dollar Baby. That's like the extent. That is the extent.
That's
I haven't even watched
that.
Rocky.
No.
Joe, I've never seen Rocky.
You gotta watch Rocky.
Okay, I will. But I'm just saying, like, I have no reference for any of this. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were like, there's no diversity in BG. And I was like, oh, have I got a place for you. I was like, you go over to a Mexican fight club, my friend, and you're going to find some diversity, and you're going to love it. Like, it's fascinating
and
awesome.
The hardest part is showing up.
It is.
We had to put our flyer box on the outside of the door because people are so afraid to walk in here.
But the thing is, okay, this is another thing I wanted to say. It is so cute outside. Okay, it's on this little, like, it's this beautiful little brick facade building with this cute little canopy and there's flowers hanging out. And it's just on Main Street, and it's so cute. It's like very Gilmore Girls. You probably don't even know what Gilmore Girls is. Okay, you do. He does. He's a Renaissance man. And then there's like then you if you look a little closer, you see Garcia MMA and kind of like the tattoo type. What is it? The font, right? And you're just like, it still looks very unassuming. Yeah. And it just looks very nice and deep. And then you open the door and it's just like,
whoa.
You're like, let's do this.
This place is real. And that was a big part of this was like, because honestly, we could probably quadruple the income if I let somebody come in here and teach karate or do yoga or do something else. But like,
but this
I wanted to stay
pure.
True to the culture of fighting.
Yeah. This is a fight club.
This is a fight club.
And it is a fight club that is totally suitable for a 42-year-old woman to show up with literally nothing under her belt but a bit of yoga and running.
And fit right in.
And five kids and be like, this is weird and icky to me. Let's see what happens. And end up loving it.
And now you're one of us.
And I'm one of you. And like, it's, and here I'm sitting here in a little floaty dress. And he's saying, and you're one of us. You know, but it's just like, that's it. It's like, come as you are and you will be, you will feel welcome. You will feel embraced. You will feel safe. And you will do something new. And that was so, it really opened up my life, you know, to do something new and learn about new people and see how kind people, you know, who fight can be. Yeah.
I think that's the biggest misunderstanding is a lot of people think that people that, and I understand completely, you know, I don't pretend not to realize that, you know, people look at me, yeah, they're going to make assumptions, of course.
Well, that's what you always say. You're like, Mandy goes to the door to greet people because I scare people.
Yeah,
I'm like, but you never scared me.
Yeah.
Which
is crazy because she's the tough one.
I know. That's the thing. She's got a way more intimidating personality.
Yeah. So people, I always say, like, people, they look at her and they look at me. They look at the bald, tattooed Mexican guy, you know, scar tissue all above both eyes, nose is all crooked, and they look at her, the little lady.
Yeah.
And they think
she's
that
really
she's like the nice one, and like people don't realize I'm the best friend you got in here.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You get
like,
on the wrong side of her.
She will make you do things.
You're gonna need the garbage can. She almost killed a guy out here one time. You know about that?
No.
So
do tell.
Oh.
This is a story.
Oh boy. So we were in the middle of training. So as you know, we train 3 hours.
Yes.
Hard.
Three straight
we
hours.
Do boxing. We go straight from boxing to jiu-jitsu. We go straight from jiu-jitsu to MMA. Those are three hard training sessions in and of themselves. We do them back to back to back. People stay through the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's like
it's
7:30. And this was a Sunday, so we had been here since 3 because Clint came.
Oh,
so we'd been training like 4.5 hours. We're all like, we're in the heat of things. We're hitting pads.
And it's hot in here.
It's hotter than hell in here.
Yeah.
Hell's front porch.
Yeah, I'm in a sauna right now. I'm detoxing. Yeah.
So these two guys come in, and they both look pretty athletic. You know, I can kind of gauge guys just by looking at them. They played sports. They did something. Say they're interested in training. I'm like, okay, we got about 30 minutes left in the night. You can jump in now. You can come back another day. So this other guy who looks very athletic, you know, takes his shirt off. I want to train now. I can do this. Like, everything about this dude was just, like, arrogance.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, pal, jump in. We do the 5x5. So you remember the 5x5
yes,
drill?
Yeah, yeah.
The 5x5 is literally just a drill. It's not even part of – it's just a drill we do to warm up. It's – 5 kicks each side. You throw 2 punches and you do a sprawl where you hit the deck. You do that 5 times.
That's
you do
my
5 push-ups.
Favorite part. I do not like the sprawl.
And you do 5 sit-ups. That's 1 round. You do 5 rounds. It takes about 3 minutes. It's exhausting, right?
Yeah.
Everybody
right.
hates it.
Yeah.
So we get these guys doing the 5x5 to warm up. And in the 3rd or 4th round, this athletic guy just hits the deck. I mean, he's done. He's been here 10 minutes.
Oh, really?
And keep in mind, this is a 3.5-minute drill. It's taking him 10 minutes to get halfway through.
So he is
he hits the deck
in a whole different way.
He sits over there, puts his head against the wall, and is just huffing and puffing. He's pouring sweat. He's like, what's going on? What's happening? Yeah. Mandy literally walks over to him, squats, looks this dude right in the face, and says, you're being a pussy. That's what's happening.
Oh,
I'll tell you what's happening to you. You're being soft. So he gets up and walks out there to the front to get some air, because like you said, it's hotter than hell in here. There's no circulation in here, and we turn the heat up when we're training.
Right.
Sits on the sidewalk. We think he left. We're assuming this guy got his shit and walked out. So we keep training. I mean, we finish our training session. We spar 45 minutes. We finish hitting pads. So at this point, probably close to an hour has gone by. We're getting ready to leave. The guy's still sitting out front.
Just still trying to collect himself?
He passed out.
Oh, my gosh. The poor guy.
The guy's on the sidewalk, half unconscious, vomit all in front of him.
Oh,
so
my gosh. So poor Mandy's like, oops. she didn't feel bad.
No, none of us did.
She's always been so kind to me.
None of us felt bad for him.
Oh, because he came in super arrogant?
He came in arrogant and knew what he signed up for.
Yeah.
But yeah, he passed out on the sidewalk, and they had to, I think they took him to the hospital, and he wound up being totally fine. Yeah, so it really, he probably was just being soft.
I don't know. You see, Joe, this is where we differ. I'm like, you know, as a personal trainer, I find that when a client says, I'm going to puke, I'm like, let's back off a bit.
See, so for me as a trainer, when a client says they're going to puke, that's when we're starting. That's our starting
point. This is how you turn out a fighter, and I'm like, let's lose 10 pounds. Yeah, we have different goals here.
I was at downtown the other day. So I used to be a bouncer there myself, and I left there when I opened this place. And my nephew's a bouncer there now. So I'll go over there and hang out with him sometimes, eat chicken wings, whatever. And there's this guy who I try not to be judgmental, but sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes I can tell by looking at somebody if they're cut from the same cloth or not.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but sometimes I can look at a guy and, buddy, the same for you.
Yeah, the same.
Sometimes I'm wrong. I still give you a shot, but trust me, pal, the same for you. So this guy asked me if I'd train him. And I know this guy from going over there, and I know he's a drunk. I know he likes to party.
Yeah.
You know, I know he's not very focused.
Yeah.
So I'm like, probably not, man. I don't think you'd fit in at my place, which goes to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
The kind of person that he is, you know, more support to him, but here...
Yeah, it's not the right place.
You wouldn't fit in my gym, man. I can give you a phone number for other trainers.
Yeah.
I know gyms you would do great at. I'd be glad to help you, but my gym, you probably wouldn't.
You wouldn't like it.
He got really, I mean, he took it personal. So all night, this guy's, why won't you train me? Why won't you train me? You know, what's wrong with me? Not that I won't train you. I just don't think you'd make the cut.
I don't think you're going to like it.
So I'm sitting there with this guy, sitting next to me. He's got a beer in front of him. I say, take a bite out of that glass. He looks at me like that was the craziest thing. Like, you're looking at me now. Like, that's
yeah,
like, what
I
the
am
hell are you
looking
talking
at
about?
You like, what the, what
I said, take a bite out of your glass. I looked him dead in the face. I said, take a bite out of that glass. It took him no time at all to go, what the, no, why are you telling me that?
Yeah.
And I tell him this, I wasn't going to let you take a bite out of your glass.
But yeah, you need to trust me.
But the
me.
Difference is, my fighters in here, even my kids.
Yeah.
If I tell them to take a bite out of the glass, I would have to stop them because they would try it. They wouldn't think twice because they got it here.
Yeah.
Because this breaks you down mentally so much and builds you back up that they wouldn't think twice about it. And it's the same thing, as crazy as it is for me to say, take a bite out of your glass. If we're in the middle of a fight and you're down 2 rounds to none and you've been getting battered, and I tell you go knock him out because you have to get a finish to win, that's going to sound just as crazy as take a bite out of your glass.
Yeah.
And you got to be able to go do it.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of a mental exercise. But that's what showed him that...
She's like, I don't think I'm going to like that.
Yeah.
I like to have autonomy in my situation. That's the thing, though. You do kind of inspire a lot of trust because I've never had, you know, you've never asked, you know, I've never been part of a drill or whatever that I've thought, nah, I'm not going to do that. Even though it looked, you know, I've like done chokes and stuff when you're like, okay, we're going to practice this
that
choke and you did it
trust.
On me. And totally, I'm like, one wrong move and that's that for me, and it never occurs to me not to, you know, there's an incredible amount of trust, and not just for you, it's like everybody else here, because you do put your, you know, your old bones in the hands of these young kids.
When I roll with somebody, I'm literally trusting them not to kill me.
Well, this is true, and there was one time where I was like, somebody got a little carried away, and I was like, holy, that just showed me how close we all are. Yeah. You know, if we don't trust each other, if we're not careful,
it could go really bad.
It could, and I think there's this sense of very peaceful trust. Like, I will do as you say because I know you're never gonna hurt me, and it might be very uncomfortable.
But I'm gonna do this just until it's so uncomfortable that you need me to stop, and then I'm gonna let go.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful thing about this. So I love this concept of jiu-jitsu as well, the tapping. that you have the autonomy in everything, that you get to tap out. And I love this. It's like people are like, well, no, what if something... Well, at any point, in any fight, you can tap out. And, you know, it's like, this is such a... To me, this is such an important lesson for us to learn in life, that we are in control of the situation. We're in control of our relationships. We're in control of our what we decide to do with our time. We're in control of our thoughts. It may not feel that way for any of these things, but we get to decide, are we going to go for it? Are we going to tap? Are we going to adjust? And that's the wonderful thing about jiu-jitsu. It's like, you're going to be fine so long as you know when to tap.
And that's an important lesson too, like, and literally as well. There's some people that come in here like, oh, I would never tap.
Which is insane. Or I see people watch fights.
If somebody caught me in a choke, I would just let them put me to sleep. Like,
well, that's
sometimes
dumb.
You have to tap. And it's the same thing, like you said, in life. Like, sometimes it's too much to handle on your own. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes you have to kind of say, this is too much for
you. You got to tap. You got to ask for help. And, you know, for me, with the PTSD thing, I was just putting together a workbook of, you know, of my own sort of personal tips. And for me, it came to the point that I had to bow out of life. I had to quit my job. I had to commit to therapy. I had to commit to getting better, because there was no option other than to break. Well, yeah. I had already broken, so then I was kind of forced. But it was like, you nap, and that's all I was going to do, is basically just sleep my life away. And that's what I was doing. I was catatonic the whole time when I wasn't suicidal. So I'd wake up, be suicidal, and then go back to sleep. And that was my life. And, you know, I'd been dragging myself to work and everything, and then feeling suicidal, and then not being able to show up. It was just a mess. And I love this concept of, you can choose. You can go like, okay, I got to tap out of life so that I can freaking sort myself out. And that is, I had the great luxury of being able to do that. But everybody does have a corner of their life that they can put a boundary and go, I'm going to commit to getting better. I'm going to commit to addressing this. I'm going to commit to getting out of this relationship, which is not working for me, or this person. I'm going to commit to leaving this job or this habit. Or this way of thinking, you know?
So I always use a boxing metaphor for that. I call it taking a knee. So in boxing, because obviously I did that my whole life before I did MMA. And in boxing, you can take a knee. Anytime your hand touches the canvas, your knees touch the canvas, any part other than your feet touches the canvas in a boxing match, you get an eight count. Whether if it's a knockdown or not, maybe you slip and somewhere your hand goes like this. The referee is going to put you in the corner. He's going to give you an eight count and allow you to continue. So if you're getting beat up, you can take a knee. You drop to your knee. The referee stops and it gives you an eight count. It's kind of, I wouldn't say it's cheating, but it's a way to kind of give yourself a, you know.
A minute.
So that's kind of the reference I use, is taking a knee. I got to take a knee. Sometimes you got to take
a knee. You got to take a knee, man. You got to take a knee. And that's the thing. It's like you tap, you snap, or you nap. And for me, I'm like, why the hell not tap?
Like, that's the most viable. Why would you ever do the other two?
Why would you do the other two? And the only reason is ego. And ego in a fight and in life will break
you. Will kill you.
Yeah. And
ego
so
will kill you.
This is the thing. Ego is just the enemy. You know, if we can freaking get as out of our ego as possible, the things we can accomplish.
I think everybody should take an ass whooping at least once in their life.
Yeah. For real. Because everybody does take one in life.
Yeah.
But take a physical
ass
whooping?
Like an actual ass whooping.
Yeah.
I think it's good for, builds character. I know people say it all the time, like, oh, it builds good. Like, it really does build
character. It honestly does build character. And the other thing that I found was really, yeah, because, you know, you sometimes think, well, if I was in this situation, what would I do? Or I could get out or whatever. To know, it is very, very humbling. And it's a good lesson to learn that when you put your life in somebody else's hands willingly, you know, it's very traumatic when you're doing it unwillingly, but when you do it willingly, yeah. And then, you know, you've got to tap out. That is very humbling, and really good for you. And the other thing is that what I love about jiu-jitsu is kind of taking a slight swerve, is that you cannot be anywhere else. It is such a lesson in being present. When somebody else is on top of you, crushing the air out of you, or they've got you they're going for an arm bar or something similar.
It does not matter if you left the oven on.
You cannot think of anything but trying to survive, trying to breathe and making the next intelligent move.
Yep.
And if not, then you tap. You know what I mean? There's just like, you are the most present that you... I do a lot of yoga. I meditate and I run. And all of these things are really helpful for getting the poison out and helping me to focus and stay present. But there is nothing that I've experienced like jiu-jitsu for being absolutely
just to put you
present.
In your body.
You being in your body. And that was the, I think that was the most therapeutic part of this whole thing for me. Is that I needed moments of just being present, not in the past, not in the future.
I think that's a big part of it for me too. Like I think of my, I always like think of my thoughts. Like you ever see the things they use at bingo, like
yes,
the tumbler? That
yes.
Like that's like my thoughts, or
they're
all the bingo
balls. They're
just
rolling around
like
everywhere.
You're trying like hell to grab one and gather them, and there's just
yeah,
no reason to.
They're everywhere. Yeah.
But when I'm training, or when I'm fighting, or when I'm hitting pads, or when I'm running, or when I'm doing something involved with this, like I'm only focused on that.
Yeah.
And especially when you're in the cage with somebody who's literally trying to kick you in the head and render
yeah.
you unconscious.
You're
like,
what is...
You can't think of anything else.
What's my next move?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
And wouldn't we all be so productive in life if all we did is, what's my next best move? Like, we're not fixating about the past. We're not trying to anticipate the future. We're just like, what can I do
right now?
And it's such a brilliant way to live if we could really just transport that into our everyday. This being fully conscious is amazing, and one move at a time, because you're not thinking 10 moves. This is not chess. This is one move at a time, because you don't know, you know. It's like
one move at a time.
And I love that. It's just like, just do the next best thing for yourself.
Keeps you in your body, keeps you present.
So yeah, and you know, it's the patience that you showed, because I always say I would, when I first started out, I would roll, I'd get out of, you know, someone's guard and then roll and go to the door, like halfway sprint to the door. I'd be like, what am I supposed to be doing? And then you're like, now you're supposed to get them.
Crush them completely.
You're supposed to. And you just say it really patiently over and over, because it was so instinctive for me to get out from under this big crushing body and run for the door over and over again. And then in time, I became super comfortable with rolling over and getting on top of someone and staying there, you know, as long as I needed to. It was an amazing, and not, it didn't take very long.
No. I have a lot of patience with people when it comes to jiu-jitsu, because like nobody in the 3 years this place has been open, I've never had somebody come in the door who was as bad as I was when I started. And I've had some people that are pretty bad.
Yeah, like me.
But never as bad as I was. When I first started doing jiu-jitsu, I had been training probably 6 months and I couldn't do a hip escape.
Oh.
Now, how long did it take you to do at least a hip escape? What?
Yeah.
Maybe a week or two?
Yeah.
Like people usually get it in their first day.
Yeah.
A week or two is long. A month is a long time. Six months, couldn't do it. To the point that the coach, who's a great guy, you know, I still talk to him to this day, but he pulled me aside one day, like, look, man, he's like, you were good at boxing. He's like, but I don't want to keep taking your money.
Yeah,
like,
you're not getting better. This ain't for you.
Like, this is it's literally hurting me at this point, because I'm taking your money and you're not getting better.
Yeah,
maybe
well,
you
that
should
was
do
very
something
ethical
else.
Of him. Yeah. Like, maybe you should move to Muay Thai or something. Yeah.
And then one day it just clicked and I got better at it. And now I got a freaking 100 medals hanging over there.
Yeah.
So
you're very good at it.
So, yeah. I tell people to trust me when I say it takes time. Like, everybody's kind of on their own journey. So even if somebody who started the same day as you might be doing a little better, like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's not a comparative thing.
Eventually it'll just click.
Yeah. And for me, it's like, for me... The big thing was being able to put my weight fully on somebody and be really confident in that. Like, I was so careful of keeping the distance or not hurting or not, you know, and just being really confident with, like, I have to put all my weight. That, for me, was such a transformative experience.
And you wanted to just smash.
Yeah. It was just, like, being comfortable with that was amazing. It was just good for me in every possible way. So, yeah, you've always said that. You're like, nope, don't feel bad because nobody was as bad as me. And that's amazing. So what made you just keep – did you like it?
Yeah.
You were so bad at it, but you still liked it.
Yes, because, I mean, I'm a fighter, but I'm really a competitor.
Yeah.
Like, I just love to compete. I like to get up every day and just go after some kind of physical goal.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, like, from a really young age – I think everybody knew I was more likely to win a Heisman than a Nobel Prize.
Well, at least they were thinking in terms of that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I've always kind of been more brawn than brain. And And with jiu-jitsu, I just, like, every time I got beat, like, my first tournament, you do your weight class, okay? And then you do the open division, which is everybody in your belt division of any weight. And then you do gi and no gi. So I competed in four divisions and went 0-4. So I went in my weight class with the gi, got tapped out. And then I did the open weight with the gi and got tapped. And then same thing, no gi, got tapped. Open weight, no gi, got tapped. I would do that like three or four tournaments. Didn't win a match.
Yeah.
I drove all the way to Cincinnati one time and like my match was 20 seconds.
Did you go being like, I'm going to win this time?
Every single time.
And then how would you feel when you drove away?
I got to do something different.
Oh, so that was how you did it. Like, not like, oh, yeah, I suck at this. That's amazing.
I got to do something different. Now, I have had moments like that.
Yeah.
But back then I did. Back then I was just like, I got to get better at this. I got to get better at this.
So what am I going to do different?
What am I going to do different next time? Because I can't keep letting guys beat me like this.
I love this. And this is how we just approach any defeat in our life. Like, that didn't work. So that was experience. What am I going to do different? It's just all the teacher. There are no failures, right?
Yeah. I did have one time I went up to a tournament, and it was a jiu-jitsu tournament. This was only a couple years ago. I mean, I was a blue belt at the time. I was halfway decent at jiu-jitsu at this point. I was an established competitor. But I went up, and I competed against this guy named Doug Herring, who's like 6'6", super athletic guy. And it was just me and him in the weight class.
Yeah.
And he was a little more experienced than I was. He was like a 4-stripe blue belt I had just gotten mine. And he tapped me out in the gi. And when it's just you and one other person in a weight class, you have to go best 2 out of 3. So I had to compete against him twice. So we're in the gi, and he taps me out the first time. I'm like, whatever. And I'm still in this point, like, I'll do better. You know, I get another match. I'll beat him next time. So then the second time, he taps me with a knee on belly. So you remember the knee on belly position,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's the worst.
It's kind of a it's kind of like a taboo thing in jiu-jitsu to tap to a knee on belly.
Why? It's the absolute, like, worst.
It's like, it's just known, like, you don't, it's like in MMA, you don't tap to strikes. Like, if a guy's hitting you, you don't, like, if you get tapped out, you get knocked out, whatever, but you don't tap because a guy's hitting you. Same, like, in jiu-jitsu, you don't tap to a knee on belly.
Why? There's, like, literally nothing worse than knee on belly.
It's like, it's shame.
It's shame.
And he tapped me with a knee on belly. So this guy had beat me twice, very hand, just demolished me twice. And I knew it was going to be me and him in the no-gi, too, so I was just going to go home. So I go, I mean, this guy already demolished me twice. I know what's going to happen. So why am I going to go out there and put myself out there again twice in the no-gi when I can just go home, save myself for 4 hours?
Yeah.
So I go in the locker room, taking my gi off. I'm all pissed off. I'm like, I'm leaving. Like, it is what it is. I'll learn from it. But for today, I'm going home. And who other but Mandy is like, what the fuck are you, like, you are not going home.
Of course.
I mean, she literally, like, grabbed me by the ear. Like, you still got to go fight this guy in the no-gi. We are not going home.
Awesome.
Like, I will lock you out of the car. We're not going home. You're going to go compete. So then I beat the guy 10-2 in the no-gi.
Holy crap. No way.
It is my favorite match of all time.
That's amazing.
I just had a little kid ask me the other day which one of those is my favorite medals. And it's actually, like, one of the most dinkiest ones.
Yeah.
So it's got to be this one. Because that dude, like, broke me mentally earlier in the day. And then I came back and beat him.
That's amazing. And it just goes to show the people who support us and get, you got to surround yourself with the right people.
I was going to go home.
Yeah.
And she was like, she literally said, I will lock you out of the car.
That's awesome. Like, that's such a good story.
It wasn't like she meant it. Like, we are not leaving.
We are not leaving.
You're fighting.
You're finishing this.
Yeah.
So that's a really good lesson. If you have endeavors, you need to surround yourself with people who believe in you and are, like, all the way there for you when you start to doubt yourself.
Because they'll believe in you more than you believe in yourself.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you're the one taking the punches.
Yeah, for sure.
So you need somebody who's like, nope, I'm not going to let you give up on yourself. Yeah. You know, that's amazing.
That's really good story. She's had to do that for me a lot.
Yeah.
Probably like 100 times she's had to talk me off a ledge when it comes to just quitting. And not even just like after losing fights. There's just, like you said, there's some days I wake up. I mean, I'm 28 and my freaking knees are cracking. I have no cartilage in my knees.
Yeah.
You know, this can barely see out of this eye. I can barely hear out of this ear. Like,
dude.
I've got 400,000 miles on me.
Yeah, you do. You do.
But then a lot of times it's had been her. Like,
but
no,
you've lived
still
with a lot of passion and you've taken a massive amount of joy in the whole thing. So that's actually another good point. It's like, you know, what's the point of having the sports car in the garage when you could be... did I say that in the American way or the South African way?
South African way.
Okay, because I was trying hard to say it the American way because my kids get so irritated when I say it the wrong way, but I've psyched myself out now.
Garage.
So, But what's the point of having that sports car all nice and polished up and then never driving it? It's just, there's no point, you know? And a lot of people live their lives that way. It's with no risk, with no, you know, pain, nothing. They just live this very bland existence. And it's like, what are you saving it all for? Huh?
So then they go out and get hit by a bus one day.
Right. It's like, what are you saving your... I mean, honestly, you've got to be judicious about your body and make the right choices for you. And, you know, but what are you saving, you know... What are you saving the nice perfume for one thing? You know, like what I remember my granny always saying, you don't save perfume, Christy. You wear the good perfume every day because it goes bad. And I am a big believer in wearing the expensive perfume every day. There's no way that I'm going to like save it for the one time I get to go out to a fancy place, because when's that going to happen?
I honestly, I'm being really serious. I think that might be the next motto we put up on the wall. Wear the good perfume every day.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
We've
for
got,
a, for a
I
gym.
Can, I will, I must.
Wear the good perfume.
We've got, this isn't for the weak and uncommitted. And then there's a blank spot on the wall right between those two. I think that might be the place for wear the good perfume.
I think you should do it. Wear the nice perfume.
Wear the good perfume every day.
Seriously, though, like, what? I might not be here tomorrow, so I'm not going to enjoy smelling nice. I'm not going to, like, smell nice for my family. Like, this is crazy. And that was such a, and that's how my granny lived. Like, every day was a celebration, and she was so loved, and she was so happy and so fulfilled. And I just really, when I start to get all weird about, you know, saving money in dumb ways or depriving myself or going on dumb diets where I'm hating life, I'm like, no.
That's the same metaphor I use, man, because people ask me, you know, obviously fighting is not good for your body.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend that it is.
Well, I mean, it might be better for your body than lying around sedentary.
Very.
You know, it really might, if you have a choice. It's better to be in the middle, I think. But
like, as far as risk-taking, so, like, I had an uncle who... you know, lived very, I guess, scrupulous is the word. You know, like, took very good care of himself, took very little risk.
Yeah.
Had a heart attack at 45.
Mm.
And now my grandpa smoked a carton of cigarettes a day, would literally take raw hamburger meat, throw salt and pepper on it, and eat it.
Oh, hell.
Lived to be 80.
That goes to show.
Lived a long, long life.
And really took a bite out of life, it sounds like. He really enjoyed himself. Yeah. So it's not that we're condoning, like, doing stuff like this. Necessarily, but yeah, just enjoy your freaking life. Like, take a bit of risk.
Take a risk. Eat the cake.
Take a risk. Yeah, I was just, my sister just did this ultra marathon, and she had never done more than a half marathon before, and she just upped and freaking did an ultra this weekend.
Oh my God.
And I was like, and you're alive? She's 6 years older than me. I'm like, yet you live? And she's like, yeah. And the thing is, this is the thing, we psych ourselves out. I have been running long distance since I was 17. I've yet to do a full marathon because I'm like, oh, yeah. And now I'm like, you know what? I'm doing a marathon, and I'm not even going to train for it because I don't want to break my body down training for it. I'm just going to do it. It's going to be a horrible day.
How long is a full marathon?
It's 26 miles. So she did a full marathon and then a half marathon on top of that. So that's a lot. Yeah. And then she just did it, and she lived to tell the tale. She didn't train, you know, I mean, she's not unfit. She's been doing half marathons routinely, and I was just like, oh yeah, I'm totally signing up for one. This is ridiculous. I've had it in the back of my mind. I don't want to do marathons in general, but I've always wanted to say I've
just
done one.
Just cross off the bucket list.
Yeah, so I know what it feels like.
You ever heard of Badwater?
No.
I've always wanted to do the Badwater. I've never ran
what
anything.
Is
I've
this?
Never done a half marathon. I've never done a 5K.
Yeah, but you run.
Yeah, I run. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're a fast runner.
Yeah, there's fight camps where I'm running 10 miles a day.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've never actually done a competitive run.
Yeah, do it.
Because it doesn't involve punching or kicking.
It's a lot of fun, though.
But the Badwaters, you know who David Goggins is?
Yes.
So That's what he did.
Oh, yeah.
The 100-mile race
that's
where he,
bonkers.
His kidneys failed.
Yeah, and then he, like, taped his freaking feet together.
Because they were broken.
Yes. That guy is demented.
Love that guy.
I know,
but
I
like,
do
that
too.
Dude is my
I'm like
spirit animal.
I'm absolutely obsessed with him. I cannot like get enough of it, but it's just like there's a level of like, and yet he lives. That's what I keep saying. And he's happy and fulfilled and inspiring people. It's like we're very careful with ourselves. We're very careful about risk, and it's because we have this illusion of control. We think that, you know, I'm going to save myself. Like, you don't know. I could walk out here and die now.
Yeah.
You know, so this is a really interesting thing. You know, find the happy medium for you, I suppose, but do take a bit of risk, because risk is fun. And I'm really glad that I walked in here that day and took that risk.
I'm a risk junkie.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, I'm a risk junkie. I
think you are. I think you've got a different kind of wiring to than most of us.
I'm a special kind of crazy. I always say you got to be a special kind of crazy to want to come in here. I'm a special kind of crazy.
Yeah. I'm a special kind of crazy. But it's great. It's great, and it takes all types. And I really am glad I know you, and that I've met you and Mandy and your lovely family. You're all so wonderful, and the family that you've... Okay, we got cut off because it was so fun. We lost track of time. But in the interim, we were discussing a little bit more about your fight before we close this convo. I really liked what you said, because you... we were just kind of rehashing, like, you know, how it all went down, and you were saying, you know, the guy actually did come in overweight, but that wasn't, you know, you never mentioned that before, and I don't know if you wanted me to say anything.
Yeah, enough. No, we can. So,
but
I mean, you can tell by looking at the picture of the weigh-in, the guy was a lot bigger than I was.
Yeah.
And even before the fight, I had people walking up to me like, "That's the guy you're fighting? Like, seriously?
Like, this guy doesn't look right."
Yeah. I actually had my boss. Saw the guy. He's like, "Dude, that's the guy you're fighting." He's like, "If I saw that guy, I would either run or grab my gun."
Yeah, like, oh, that's encouraging to say to somebody before a fight.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was about two times my size.
Yeah, no, he's significantly larger than you for sure.
But what I was saying was, is it actually had nothing to do with why he beat me.
Yeah,
I you know, if he would have picked me up and slammed me or held me against the fence or, you know, pinned me in positions like where I could feel his strength, like, okay, this guy's beating me because he's bigger. Then I would say, yeah, the size difference was it. But really, I could tell in the fight that he just had a really high fight IQ. He had an answer for everything I was doing. I threw my overhand, he threw a head kick. I shot him for a takedown, he trapped my arm with a crucifix. He knew where I could beat him and where he could beat me. And he didn't try to beat me at my own game.
Yeah.
He just executed better than I did.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why, I mean, it always hurts to lose, but I didn't lose any sleep over it. Because sometimes the guy's just better than you.
Yeah.
And Saturday, I mean, that guy was better than I was.
And I love your take on that. I think that's just, I mean, this is all such a healthy way to view life. And is if you do, you know, you show up with, and I just posted something yesterday about, you know, not obsessing about always doing your best, just do it sometimes. But, you know, in a fight, obviously,
a little bit different.
It's
different.
Fighting. You know, you've got to train. You've got to come up with your best, you know, stuff. You've got to put in the work. You've got to put in the hours before you show up if you're wanting to win. And if you do all that, you can be at peace. If, like you said, the guy just fought a better fight. And I love that you didn't use his size as an excuse, which you easily could have if you were ego-driven, which you aren't. And it was like...
He was a smart fighter.
Yeah, and I think that philosophy is why you can keep getting back up. Because you're like, I have control over what I have control over. And I came in there and I did my best and he was better than me and on we move. Like, yep. I've learned from that and it's nothing.
Do.
But you're saying, you know, if you feel like I could have run another mile, I could have been in better shape and the guy just won because I was out of shape, that's
you'll lose sleep forever.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got losses. I've got boxing losses when I was 13 that I still think about because I slacked.
Yeah.
Because I didn't run that extra mile. I didn't go to that extra training session. I, you know, hung out with my friends instead of training. Like, because you never get that back.
Right.
You can never run that back. Even if you rematch the guy and beat him, or you rematch him twice and you go 2-1, like, you still lost that one time. You can never go back and redo it.
But so you can use that, though, instead of letting that paralyze you out of, like, guilt or sadness or, like, regret. You
Put
can use that to motivate you. I don't want to feel that way again.
Put the work in now.
Yeah. And that's how you can be at peace when you lose and keep going back and keep going back. And this is a really good way of looking at life again. You know, life is a fight. I always say life is a marathon, but this is a really excellent way of, you know, looking at the world. If we can just sort of translate all these lessons that you're teaching us into the way we live our lives, we'll be okay. We will always be able to keep getting back up, no matter how big the opponent is, no matter how worthy the adversary or the trial or the terrible thing that happens to us. If we can live in the moment, if we can take personal responsibility, that's the key. You know, that's where I found that I really turned the corner for my recovery, is when I was like, wait, I get to choose how I'm going to feel. Yay! I do not have to make this person sorry. This person does not have to apologize in the way that I think they should. I do not have to do any of these things. I can just choose to be at peace. Hooray, you know?
That's great.
when that penny drops, and that's the exact same kind of thing, you're free and you have the energy to keep getting back up, and life becomes enjoyable, and challenges are challenges and not beat downs, and I love that.
Yeah.
So you're an inspiration. Keep on doing you. Try to protect your head, though.
Hands up, chin down.
As a mother, I have to say, you must protect your little head. Well, it's not that small, but, you know, please.
Try to protect what brain cells I have left.
Why don't they let you wear a helmet?
It's not spectator friendly if you wear.
Is that for
people
real?
People want to see blood.
Well, I don't. I'm going to sign a petition.
People want to see blood.
Let the fighters live. Let them not get brain damage. That's the thing. That's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. But that's a different podcast for another time. And honestly, we're going to have to do this again because this was fun. You have so many good stories and so many good things to say and a great attitude. So thank you so much for letting me be part of your world, and to you guys for embracing me and letting me just slide in here and be
Absolutely.
Me. I've loved every minute of it.
Absolutely.
And like black belts, when I get it, you will be the person who presents it, no
That's
doubt.
Right.
Okay, so great. That should be in about,
Absolutely.
What, 15
yeah,
to 25?
So 10 to 15. 10 to 15 if we start tomorrow.
All right, let's do it. Okay. Thank you so much, Joe. And if you want to check out Garcia MMA, come on down to, what's the address here in the
124 BG? West Worcester.
West Worcester. And is there like any, where can people like check in with you if they want to like hash things out and talk to you beforehand?
GarciaMMA.com.
Right.
Is our website. My Instagram is Joe the Guardian, all one word.
Joe the Guardian. Cool.
That's about it. Hit me up.
Yeah, and you can contact him any of those places, and they are happy to talk to you about your hang-ups or your concerns or whatever.
Or you just show up.
And you do privates as well if people
yep.
are more comfortable.
Yep.
Yeah, and you know, as a woman, I would highly recommend it. No matter how weird and crazy it sounds, it's one of the best things I've ever done for myself. So, thank you again.
Thank you.
And like, let's roll, right? Okay. Wow.